You're having gill ball problems. I feel bad for you, son. You got 99 problems, but a pitch is gonna be one? This is the pitch. I had to do that one for Devil Squid. That was all his. welcome to the pitch. This is Lance.
And I'm Dan.
And welcome to our second episode of our Midwest Meta Guild Ball podcast. We're going to launch into a few different topics today. We have an update on the Union and Chains situation. We also have some battle reports from a local tournament that I helped run and got to participate in. And then we're going to get into a little bit of tech with everybody's second favorite Mortician's Captain. starting off here, we're going to get into our news and announcements with the Union and Chains. They announced on Monday the current statistics for where everybody is at in terms of guilds, in terms of voting for who's going to get their veteran model. We're very close. Their little blog post down at the bottom said that most of them were kind of too close to call. They do have some numbers on them, with the exception of Alchemists and Engineers. Alchemists and Engineers are kind of a blowout right now. Veteran Harry is 75% Alchemist Guild, 25% Engineers Guild. So the Alchemists are running away with that one, unless the Engineers step up and try to make a move on Harry. It looks like he might be going Alchemist, at least from this week one situation.
Honestly, probably good for Harry, because he just would have had his limbs ripped off by Pendice, so it's probably in everyone's best interest if he goes out.
Yeah, I saw the post today. Someone posted something with the veteran Harry model mock-up, which was basically the guy from Twisted Metal, the PlayStation game, with his two arms locked into the big wheels with guns coming out the front of them, that they said that was going to be the veteran Harry model. I don't know. Yeah, from a perspective of Harry, that's fine. It's hard to say whether or not this is just because of there may be a less than normal number of engineers players. I don't know if there's that many engineers players that are taking advantage of this sort of thing, but if they are out there and you guys want Harry the Hat, I mean, more 2-inch reach for you guys can't be wrong. Access to the fire effect and goad, I would think you guys would want that model, but, you know, I would say make a run for it if you possibly can. But as of right now, it is in the Alchemist's hand. Down to everybody's the most closely contested one. So starting with the least contested to the most contested is Veteran Gutter between the Fish and the Butcher's Guild. It is a 52% Butcher's Guild, 48% Fisherman's Guild. It is really, really close on that one, and both of those teams want that model really bad. I think we talked about that last week, that they could both really make use of that model in lineups, and the fact that it's that close is very interesting. I'd be very curious as to how that turns out.
Things are going to get more heated up as soon as they reveal the model spoiler for that one.
That's absolutely true. So we'll get to that in just a second. But speaking of which, the last two are the ones we do have received models on, or we at least have the idea what the renders of them look like. And we'll get into that in just a second. But we'll start with the one they announced last week, which is Veteran Hemlock, being fought over by the Hunters and the Morticians Guild. As of right now, the Morticians are up 59% to 41%. So the Morticians are winning that one pretty well, but it's still anybody's game at this point with that close of contest. I'm just going to bounce over to the models real quick. If you took a look at the original blog post, they did list that there were going to be separate renders depending on where the model went. And if you look at the Hemlock one, there's two different options. There's her in the full hunter regalia. She basically has like a hooded cloak on. She's carrying a scythe and a little moonsickle hand thing. She's got a shoulder pad with like an animal skull with horns on it, looking very, very hunters. Even has a little moon goddess chain on the side of her hip. And then, of course, all leather otherwise. The Mortician's one, however, is much more of a gothic vampire countess kind of look. Same sickle, same moon hammer. You'll see that the model actually kind of is posed in almost roughly the same way, I think, so that they can kind of get molds sorted out. But then once they put the clothes on them, they can kind of change the way the model looks. Anyway, she's wearing this kind of medieval countess goth dress, and she looks like she has a snake like slithering all over both of her arms and across her back, and then her hair is just kind of like a little skull updo. So that is basically what the two models look like. any opinions on those? I like the Hunter's one a lot, actually, but I don't know if I like the Mortician's one.
See, this is funny. We didn't prepare this at all, but I'm all in on the Mortician's one.
Are you really?
It's all about those goth girls. We gotta go for it.
It's all about that Hot Topic chicks. I mean, there's really... I don't know. I mean, I would say that that model would be really fun to paint, and I would 100% use that model in Dungeons & Dragons games that I run, but I don't know if I would necessarily want her on the pitch. I mean, I feel like Cosset would get jealous. I don't know. Maybe that's just me. But the Hunter's one looks like a, you know, like a ranger from all of your fantasy games as well. I would use both of these in D&D games. I'll just throw that out there right now. Both of those models would be welcome in any Dungeons & Dragons game you have. So really, either way the model goes is fine. I just like the Hunter one better. You like the Mortician one better? Agree to disagree.
Cloaks are 2016. It's all about the dresses.
It's all about dresses. It's all about corsets and dresses. So anyway, as I mentioned, those were up to, Mortician's Guild up 59% to 41%. So far, the goth girl is winning, so Dan might get his wish. Last but not least, we have the Veteran Decimate. This is the one I at least have a little bit of a stake in, being a Brewers player in tournament play, generally speaking. Veteran Decimate is available between the Brewers and Masons. Brewers are up 60% to 40%, so it is very, very close there. Almost exactly the same as the Veteran Hemlock thing. And we are very fortunate to have gotten those models today. I think this morning they came out, the two renders of the Decimate models. However, I believe the Masons one maybe got spoiled a little early on Beast of War. Let's start with the Masons one. The Masons one has... her standing there with a giant, basically a giant mallet. She's got kind of a loincloth and then basically like a Russian like fur hat on. People who play War Machine think she looks like a Sorsha model, if that makes any sense to you. She does have a little bit of the normal face mask that she used to have, but the twin rapier swords are gone, and she is definitely looking a little bit beefier than her old model specifically is in terms of being a fencer. So what do you think of that sculpt?
I'm not a big fan of the Ashunkas. Is that what the... I think that's what the Russian hat is called. So
Your guess is as good as mine. I have no idea.
I'm going all in for the Brewers on this one.
Okay, well, I'm in the same boat with you, but mostly because the Brewers are my team. The other model is basically Decimate as a Conan the Barbarian Red Sonja type character. She's got the hair braid coming down the front of her. She's carrying a giant broadsword on her back. She's got a bottle on her hip. She's wearing the leather normal that the Brewers wear. I think she is showing a midriff, and then her arms are bare with like fur gloves. So very much a kind of a barbarian type character with the Brewer's symbol on the pauldron. Yeah, that's very, very sweet model. I really hope she goes Brewers. I think Brewers could make use of her, especially if they have her with that kind of broadsword. You gotta hope she gets her 2-inch reach back from season one. I don't know if you remember that model, but back in the day when she originally came out, she had 2-inch reach, which with two rapiers, which didn't make any sense, but they did back it down to one eventually. But if they give her back the 2-inch reach with that broadsword, I think Brewers would be a very happy situation as well. Brewers need more reach, but I'm happy with it.
Can I just comment that I feel like I'm going to win either way, because I have always been confused by the model with the mustache and the art. Like, I feel like they had a design concept and then they forgot about it, and then... Or maybe it was intended to have a mustache. Like
It was meant to be like a Guy Fawkes mask. It was meant to be kind of the V for Vendetta type thing, where she was wearing a mask that had the mustache on it. But I think the model was originally, from what I'd heard, this is all urban legend, I don't have any inside track on it, but the idea was that Mist used to be a girl, was originally going to be a female model, and Decimate was supposed to be male. So when they started doing the sculpts, that's the way they were designed. And last minute, they decided to change the sexes. I'm not sure exactly why, but it happened. And still, you will hear people call Mist a girl, and you will hear people call Decimate a guy. It just happens. It's people just do it. I generally tend to correct them because I'm kind of a fluff bunny about this game. In particular, like, no, that's a guy. That's not a girl. Oh, right. It's just Mist is. She's doing this, like, it's not a girl. So I do like, yes, the idea of this showing off that, hey, this is Veteran Decimate, and Decimate is a girl. Look at her, she's a girl, for Christ's sakes. And then moving on, you know, to not have that hopefully that would carry back, that when you use the prime version of her or the original version of her, people would remember that she's a girl. But who knows? I'm with you on that one, though. So
if you zoom in closely on the Brewers, you will see there is six-pack abs on that model. So
yes, like I said, the midriff is showing. She's definitely been working out on this in comparison to her wiry frame original.
Gotta go for the one who works harder.
I think both of them are pretty buff. If you go, if you flip back and forth between the two models, the pose is exactly the same. She's just not showing as much skin on the Mason's one as she is on the Brewer's one. So, so that is the standings as they go so far. Obviously, as we get through here, we'll update you on numbers as we do episodes, but giving you an idea of at least how that goes. Remember, as we mentioned on the last episode, getting in there, changing your avatar, taking pictures of your games and posting it in your forums is how you get those numbers to move if you want to take advantage of that material, which we did have quite a few people doing that during the tournament we were running this weekend. And yes, I did that as a transition. Let's move on to Battle Report.
Podcast professional.
Like I've done this before. All right, so this weekend we had a tournament at Mayhem Games in Des Moines, Iowa. I was the TO for it. We did end up having about 7 people show up, and instead of doing buys, I decided to participate. When you have a low enough count, that's not necessarily frowned upon. Maybe it is. We can discuss that at length, but I decided to join in so that there wasn't a buy, on top of the fact that I wanted to get some more, tournament time rep play in, so I decided to do so, and played the Blacksmiths. I had my set from Gen Con, so I just had the standard set. My roster was the same every game. It is the pure set that's in there. I did not do, as much as I decided I wanted to put Hearth and Alloy in there, as we mentioned from last week, people were yelling at me for not doing that, so I decided to just stay with the team that I had, which was of course the Ferrite, Iron, Cinder Furnace, and Anvil Sledge lineup. So I guess I'll start, and then we'll lead into Dan's material at the end of this, and then we'll go into the scalpel material. So we only had 8 people, so it was just a 3-round event. It was very fast. First game I ended up playing against, Dan brought a lot of people in his area, which is kind of more eastern Iowa.
I rallied the troops.
You did. You rallied the troops really well. You got 5 guys, including yourself, and then I had 2 locals and myself. So we had 3 Des Moines guys and 5 Iowa City guys, so I tried to pair us off so that they didn't drive that long to play each other. 2 of them did end up having to play each other, but apparently they don't play each other that often, so it ended up being fine for them to start the round with. So we had the 4 tables going. I ended up playing against James, I believe. He's a fish player, James McDonald, and is he relatively new to the game, I think?
Yeah, he was a very, very good X-Wing player. He placed high at some Worlds competition, so now he's jumping into Guild Ball, and we are constantly reminded by our local game store owner to not let him win, because as soon as he wins, he quits, so we got to keep beating him.
Oh, okay. Well, I think I was able to oblige with that, because I did end up beating him. But we were playing, I don't think it played against Blacksmiths very much. I don't know if many people over your area have Blacksmiths to know what to do. But again, he was relatively new to the game, so we were just kind of showing off some stuff as we played through. And I've played against Shark a lot with a number of different teams, so I had a good idea of how to kind of play against him. He was playing Shark Fish. I think he was playing Shark and Salt. He had Jack, he had Sakana, he had Grayscales, and he had one more person that I cannot remember. Siren. Original Siren. So, because there was tons of lures and seduction attempts and stuff, which ended up working out perfectly against my low defense models. when you're playing Blacksmiths and people need, get to roll 2-3 dice to hit you with materials, and you're roughly defense 3 with your entire team, as my Brewers usually are, it tends to be a little bit interesting in terms of holding on to the ball. But the game went back and forth. I did end up kind of pushing the line forward on him. I won the role and was able to kind of advance my team forward using Anvil's While the Iron's Hot, is what the play is called. It allows you to choose the goalpost of either your opponent or yourself, and then your entire, or whoever's in the 6-inch bubble around the guy, can dodge 2 inches directly towards that goalpost. So I was able to spend a lot of the turn, or at least the starting round, is just jumping off the line with those guys and pushing forward. And I was able to kind of keep him and play on his side of the field, which is something the Fish really don't want to do. They want to speed up the board, be in your backyard so that anytime you kick out the ball, they can steal it from you and shoot their goals. So I was able to kind of contain him against his side of the board. Never really gave him a good chance for Shark to pop a legendary because he was usually playing within 6 to 8 inches of his own goalpost. And there was just a big scrum in the middle of the table because we were able to meet the lines so quickly. Caught in the net just lost its potency. Normally it's a way to kind of prevent your team from being able to break out from your own side of the table. And because I was playing on his side, he never really had a good angle on it. He was definitely trying to superstar Shark. He was loading a lot of influence on, giving him 6 almost every round, putting 3 on Siren to do her seductions or her lures. So it kind of ended up starving the rest of the team a little bit. We had the conversation afterwards. He was a great opponent, very nice guy, super enthusiastic about the game and games in general. So it was great to have the conversation with him because he was saying, okay, what should I do differently? Because I feel like he understood that I knew the game pretty well and that I could give him some tips, at least in terms of ways I've seen the game played into a more frustrating level. And I've definitely had some frustrating games against Shark, especially with Brewers. So the fact that I was able to kind of contain him and that he played the game with a lot of influence on a model that I tried to make as mitigate as much as possible, I think he kind of understood that spreading the influence around isn't always necessarily a bad idea. And that is a good tip for new players, too. I mean, you may say, you know, this player is my superstar and I got to load him to full every turn. And maybe sometimes that's true with, like, perhaps a Tapper Brewers team or maybe even a Shark team for that matter. But if you're just not getting the work done out of the model, especially on like a first turn material, there's no reason to not spread it around to the rest of your team. You know that you might waste that influence on stuff if you can't get to the models you need to get to and they're not going to do the job that you need them to do. Then you could try to generate momentum out of them and that's about the only thing you're going to be able to get. But you might want to, you know, just spread the level a little bit. I always try to say that to new players. As much as you may want to load a character to max, like your captain, you might want to spread the love around a little bit just so that you have options when things go wrong.
And to build on that, I think part of the trap is playing Guild Ball in your head, you can think of all the great possibilities that captain's going to do. But when you're playing against an actual opponent who sees you load up your captain, it's much easier to play against one model than it is to play against the whole team that has influence.
Right, because I mean, that turn when I was able to go grab the ball, I passed it back to Iron, who is a close control. He's only one inch reach, but he's a close control model. And I spent the momentum right away to dodge him backwards 4 inches to get him away from, because Shark kicked off. So, I mean, I wanted to get him away from Shark's threat range and bring him into my team. If he wanted to come get him, he could, but there was no way he wasn't going to just dive into my entire team, and then my entire team was just going to massacre him and then probably hold the ball back and that sort of thing. So it ended up working out pretty well. There was a time where I did end up scoring a goal and he kicked the ball out to open field and I hadn't activated Cinder yet.
Oh,
and
boy.
For those of you who don't know what Cinder does, you know, I'm like, you're really going to hate that I'm going to do this, but I have to show you this play real quick, to where I basically ran forward, got within the 6 inches and spent the one to kill the ball, shoot it out from the goal. He's like, oh my god, you just can make a goal kick from that ball way over, because he kicked it way off to the board edge on his side of the board, and I was able to kill it and bring it back to midfield where I had a couple of strikers in a line. And he's like, oh my god, that's so good, because then I was able to grab it the next round and then ended up snapshotting it with my captain Ferrite. And he was just like, that was so cool to see. Like, it was cool that he took the defeat well. He won. I mean, I only won 12-8. Like, it wasn't like I blew him out of the water by any means. We were counterscoring and going back and forth. I think it was around turn 3. I scored a goal. He immediately kicked the ball out. He immediately scored a goal. I kicked the ball back out. We had a little bit of more movement and activation, and then I scored again. So on turn 3, three goals were scored in a relatively rapid succession after a turn 1 and 2 of trying to set up this very elaborate plan for both of us that just didn't end up either not working, or we were trying to play so defensively we weren't trying to give each other too much, which led to the second lesson that I kind of worked with him out. The idea of when you have access to the ball, taking goal shots is something if you have to take it right then, take the shot. If you know your model is going to lose the ball, if you got someone that's really close to you that's going to tackle it, there's no reason to not take the shot. But if you're defended well enough, the longer you can wait to shoot that ball, the less models they have left to activate to respond in kind. So he made a goal shot when he didn't need to. Like, he had gotten grayscales way out of the way. None of my models were nearby, and he shot his second goal on me when he absolutely didn't have to. He could have activated three or four of his more models, made me activate my entire team so that my response wasn't immediately to score a goal again, which won me the game. And so he kind of goes, oh, okay. Yeah, no one was near him. And he had, again, it's grayscales. He has unpredictable movement. The people with 2-inch reach were all dug into a scrum. There was no way I was going to be able to get out to get to him. I'm like, that guy could have been safe the most of the game. I don't know what else you would have done. You would have wanted to still score a goal. You might just want to do it later in the turn. So it was another great lesson that we kind of learned as we played through that game, which was very fun. Again, as a pundit, I live for that kind of stuff. I live for playing the game in a way where I learn, where they learn, and there's a way for me to kind of impart at least basic strategies in this game. Again, we're not top-level players. I'm just here to try to help with some of the, I would say, beginning and intermediate strategies for new players. And definitely shooting the goal later in the round that you can only benefit you, because you're draining your opponent's resources to not be able to respond. And if you win that momentum game, you can go first turn. You might be able to steal that ball right back, score again, just keep the game going on your side. So there's no reason not to do it. So again, wrapping that game up, he scored twice on me and I scored three on him. I scored no kills, which was crazy for blacksmiths. I'm usually all about murdering with those guys, but that was a three goal to two goal game that was very, very close. And again, great opponent, sweet, sweet guy. Next round, I played against Rich, I believe.
Yep.
He was an engineer's. Yeah, he's an actual farmer. Runs a farmer's market or a fruit stand or something like that when he bought into farmers, but then he wanted a team that was on the other end of the spectrum, and so he decided on engineers, which was great. One thing I'll say about this tournament that I forgot to at the beginning of it, we had complete guild disparity. There was no one that was copying each other's guilds, which I was very excited about. So out of 8 players, we had every guild represented except for Union and
Alchemists.
Those were the only two that were not there. Every other guild in the game was represented, so that was very, very cool.
Before you go into the second game, real quick to touch on game one.
Yeah.
We might not be the top level yet, but the attitude, I think, of your opponent and yourself is something that fosters good play. If someone can lose a game and then try to learn from that, that's pretty clutch versus losing a game and blaming the dice or saying Cinder's bullshit. Like,
right.
Just that mentality. I feel like him in general, he's going to do really well, and I think the meta right now that we're building both in Iowa City and Des Moines, once people stop playing Infinity, will be similar.
I'm excited for any kind of grouping up and perhaps friendly rivalry / team up when we have to go represent the state somewhere else. Great guys, great people. And I've definitely been on both sides of that coin. There have been times where I've been very frustrated with miniatures games, not necessarily Guild Ball, but with miniatures games, and had a bad time. But I'm always trying to think of what to do better, and that's a lesson I carried over from War Machine and a number of other miniatures games that I play, is to try to just sit down and go, okay, I know I made mistakes there. I didn't play a perfect game. There has to be something else I could have done, and then try to think of what those things are. And if I win the game, and I have an opponent across from me who's relatively new, which we had in that Minnesota tournament, we had it in my tournament here, that we have a lot of new players. That, to me, is more exciting, not necessarily because I'm, can feel like I'm going to win a lot, but that I'm going to at least have the conversations with the people, if they're willing to have them, to learn. So if anybody around here is listening that's in those metas that are nearby us, and I come to a tournament and I play against you, if I lose, if you lose, I would love to have a conversation with any of you about what we could do differently. Like, I would love to have that conversation with any of my opponents that want to have a talk about it, because we're the only two that played that game. We're the only two that were, deep in the think tank about it, and to come out of it and to reflect on the decisions that we make and make changes and tweak and adjust, even if it's adjusting your roster. That's a conversation I would love to have with people, because that's the most interesting way to kind of dissect your game and figure that sort of stuff out. But if you're good, I'm going to move on to the second one. So again, is Rich, engineers player. Again, my lineup was exactly the same. His was Ballista, Hoist and Velocity, Colossus, Ratchet, Mother, and I think that's it. Yeah, so that's his total. So again, I won this game 12-8 again. But this one was, I tried something I was going I tried to live a dream. When the Blacksmiths first came out, I sat with the cards and tried to think of some sort of combo strategy of, if I kick off to a person, is there a way for me to try to, like, still strip the ball off them or try to get a first turn goal? It's the reasons why they nerfed Vitriol, they nerfed Original Siren for the fish, was that there were people that were kicking off with fast models, sprinting to their lines, stripping the ball off of them, and making shots on goal. So the Blacksmiths kind of have a way to actually do this, and they haven't been nerfed yet, thank God, because they're relatively new, so this might still happen, but I don't know if they're going to do it. If you have Farrah as your captain, which, again, I chose her as my captain every round, I feel like she's kind of the one you should do. There's some arguments about Furnace, but about Anvil, but I think for the most part it's going to be her, unless you're doing guild identities, then you could swap, which is fine. But if you take a look at her card, you'll see that she has a legendary where she gives herself +2/+2 speed, which makes her from a 5/7 to a 7/9 with a 1-inch reach. But then if she's within 6 inches, if she's captain, everybody within 6 inches of her also gets that boost. So when I was kicking off to him, I had my entire lineup where I had Anvil in the middle. Usually everybody on both sides of him was exactly 6 inches apart. She moved forward 5 inches directly in front of Anvil, so she had everybody in the 6-inch split, booted the ball off to kind of an angle towards Colossus. I probably should have kicked towards Velocity, but I knew Velocity was going to be a harder target. I wanted to get it to some lower defense models, which were kind of off to my left. So I booted it out that direction. Ended up going almost kind of straight towards them. I successfully kicked. The first kick was directly towards. I re-rolled, and it was going more to the sideline, which is where I wanted it to be. He had the plot card to make me re-roll it, and it re-rolled right back to him. But so it went up into possession of kind of towards the Colossus, and then he ends up passing it over. So what happened was, Colossus came forward, grabbed the ball, and booted it back into his line. I then kicked off Ferrite. She was fully loaded with 5 influence. I popped her legendary to give my entire team +2/+2 speed and her +2/+2 speed, and was able to charge Colossus, knock him down, and bounce off of him into... I forget who it was. I think it was either Hoist. I think it was Hoist. So I bounced into Hoist. He's knocked down. I'm not engaged by anybody but Hoist, and Hoist has the ball. And so I was with 2 for the charge to knock him down, and then I had to attack him again. So I had 3 off, so I only had 2 influence left to go in to attack Hoist. I roll the dice to hit Hoist, and I roll, because he's a 4/1 model, not crowded out, I'm just rolling 5 dice. I roll 1/4, and then 3s and 2s the rest, or 3 2s and 1s the rest of the dice. So nothing happens, and he counterattacks with the momentum that he had on the pass. And he was able to push me away, to disengage me completely, which really sucked, because then I only had the 2 influence left. I had to spend 1 to acrobatic back into him, spent the 1 to tackle the ball off him, and then just stand there at his front line, ready to be ganged up on by his roughly entire team. If I had hit that second hit, I would have been able to strip the ball off of him. He would have get the counterattack. He could maybe tackle the ball back off me. I would tackle the ball back, and then I would shoot the goal. Like, that would have been... He wouldn't have been able to push me away. I wouldn't have had to spend the 1 for the acrobatic to get back in. I would have been able to shoot a goal. It would have been at 4 dice. I would have been minus probably 1 or 2 dice, but I would have been really close. I don't think it was tap-in range, but it would have to be through the engagement with Hoist and probably kicking through Mother, I think, was my thing. So it was going to be a 2-dice-8. It was literally... That was the dream, because I had Knee Slider. The card in the background, so that if I had made that shot and made that goal, she would have dodged 9 inches back, because it's off of her max move, which is what her new max move was, under her feet, and I would have been able to bring her back almost to midfield, and then have my entire team super sped and sprinting forward to try to protect her, essentially. So that was the dream I was trying to live, and it, as expected, failed spectacularly. And so she ended up getting kind of beat up by a lot of the team, but she was counterattacking and dodging out. A lot of my team was just running towards the midline as his entire team collapsed in on her. I ended up getting her... She got deadbolted off the pitch one during, I think, turn two. I brought her back on turn three and came in off a sideline to grab a ball and kick it back to the midfield because he tried to boot it out to Colossus coming back in on that left. And then Colossus ended up killing her. So he killed me twice and shot one goal was his 8 points. And then mine was, again, three goals, I think. Or no, it was two goals and two kills on that one because I actually got some sledgehammer pile driver action off on some relatively fragile models. Because once you get into those engineers, if you can put some hurt down on them, they're going down, especially when you're doing momentous 7 damage. I was able to kill Colossus even with tooled up sledge. Even though he has like the tough hide and everything like that, the defense 2 and singled out, and I had him ganged up. It was really easy to kill that model in comparison. What else? So yeah, I'd never played the Blacksmiths into the Engineers before, so that was a really fun matchup to look at. I think a Pin Vise game would be a lot more mobile. The Ballista stuff was just interesting in terms of the push knockback and the choices that he made as to what models to try to knock down. The only thing really to report on was my attempt to live the dream, and it didn't happen. So if anybody else out there is able to come up with that sort of thing and make it work, Godspeed to you. I'm still going to try to live that dream sometime down the road. When I kick off, if I can catch somebody with it someday, I'm going to try. But it was just a failed attempt at that point.
But your game definitely inspired Rich. He got the gears turning in his head. He's all about trying to figure out Pin Vise after that loss. I feel like he's going through a different tactical approach, and he's never played Pin Vise since he's also new. So you've inspired him to buy the model and actually give it a go.
Well, I'm glad. That's fantastic. I'm glad to hear that I'm inspiring him to do that sort of thing. Again, we didn't really talk about Pin Vise. I'm just thinking of it more from my own mental dojo of if I were Blacksmiths fighting into Pin Vise, I feel like that would be a little bit of a harder game, just because Ballista is so static with what he does. Now, if you can pull off what Ballista does and you can tie a team down and keep knocking them down and shooting them backwards, he's fantastic. But I do think that Pin Vise definitely opens up the options to the oil can pass, get back to you, where you're making like 8-inch move dodges before you even shoot, it's almost too hard to defend against. There's too many angles in which the team can come into you and score goals. And then you just have the mechanical models being able to be repaired and conditions getting cleared from Ratchet. And if I played Engineers, I think I would be playing Pin Vise almost exclusively. But Ballista has a conversation, but I do think that she's probably the team that has more options for you, a bigger toolbox for you to use when you're playing in tournaments. But,
well, based on the way you've been playing your Blacksmiths, it sounds like you like scoring goals, so Pin Vise seems better for you.
I was surprised, yeah, because that's a team that Blacksmiths is definitely a 2-2 team in my mind. They're 2 goals, 2 takeouts, almost exclusively. Though if you want to kill the ball, you certainly can, and then just try to go for kills because you have both iron and sledge with momentous 7s. And they can definitely make short work out of a lot of models in the game. But there's a number of... I mean, Ferret is 4-8. There's 2 3-8 models between Cinder and Furnace. And there's a lot of, like, 3-6 models. The only one that's 2 or less is Iron himself, is 2-6. And then he has that heroic play that when he's within, like, 2 inches of the goalpost, he can shoot without momentum and that sort of thing. And gets a minus one to the target number, so he would basically need 2s to shoot a really dinky short goal. But no, they have a lot of scoring threat. And I think James kind of talked about that a bit when we were having the conversation about Fish. He's just like, I didn't know that team could score so much. And I'm like, yeah, they just have a lot of great kick stats. There's a chance where you just kind of go, huh, well, that didn't really work. I guess I could just try to go kick a goal, which is a lesson that I should have carried into my third game, but didn't. So I'll move on to my third. By this point, I was 2 wins, so I was in the winner's bracket to go to the final table. Played against Dave Drehouse or Duro that you've seen on the Guild Supporters forums and stuff. He was playing his Farmers. And he was just rocking people all day with his farmer list. Now, he had a farmer's list where he took... I did allow him to take Tater because he did have the old league model for it, but he was playing with the current card, so everything was unlevel for that. He just wasn't playing the official model of it. So he basically had a team, and I think every time he was taking the same team, where he basically subbed out Bushel for Tater. No union. He didn't take grace or benediction or anything. He just took Bushel out, the goal scorer, and put in Tater. I've had a chance to play against this type of lineup a couple of weeks in a row now at my normal game night. Tater in that team is really hard to play around. The access they have to harvest markers is kind of crazy. They're usually setting up a number of harvest markers for when you have, especially when you have Jackstraw in there. He's putting out harvest tokens like crazy. The captain is, Harrow is. So you have a lot of access to it, and it's usually twofold. One, to make sure that Wendell gets his snack break or his big breakfast, so he can buff up his attack and be crazy and get his extra influence. And then, of course, for Tater to be able to countercharge you. Countercharging with a reach model that can mow down everybody in a melee range of two with one hit momentously is kind of insane. And that can happen on the countercharge of within 6 inches of the guy. And that team tends to bunch up a lot, so if you come into anywhere in on his team, the likelihood of him charging you is fairly high. It's like Brick and the Masons, if Brick could like ground stomp a 2-inch aura around him and knock them all down. So there's a number of games I got to play in Wednesday nights, which is our normal game night, to where Tater has just been getting in the mix and just swathing down my entire team. He could be engaged with a number of different models, and if they're not at 2-inch reach, he finds the weakest one, hits them, triggers the mow down, and all of a sudden with one hit, he gains a momentum and I have three characters on the ground. Or two characters on the ground. And of course, that's a lot of positioning and stuff to do that, but you're usually trying to just play against, and then you just run out of momentum. You don't have enough momentum to stand your entire team up. You stand a guy up, make an attack on him, you maybe hit him a little bit, and then eventually he'll get that mow down again and knock the whole group down again. You know, you get in that scrum and you can't get out of it. You're stuck. It's a quicksand quagmire where that character is just knocking down everybody. And then, of course, engaging them all so that Wendell could come along and just eat whoever he wants to, generally speaking. So when we played our game, we ended up having a very cerebral game, I guess is the way we'd say it. I wasn't running on clocks this week because we don't really have very good clocks and people didn't have enough timers and stuff going. We ended up playing the game for a while. I ended up calling the game at where he was at 7 points and I was at 4, but we were all dug in and I couldn't get out of it. Blacksmiths do definitely have a game against farmers. I do think I needed to focus more on goal scoring than I did on trying to kill models. I had Tater down to 4 hit points, and in one turn, the turn afterwards, he healed 2 from Harrow, healed himself 4. With the momentum, was able to eat a harvest token for another 3 heal, and then he got healed by another character. So he was brought from 4 hit points left to full health in one turn. So it's just like if you can kill a farmer, do it, and do it in one round. Do not leave them around to heal themselves, because they will 100% do it. And I would almost say that Tater is probably the last guy you want to try to kill, which is strange to say because he's like the biggest tool you want to try to remove from the table, but I've found him to be very difficult to remove. I don't know, it's just what it is, because I just don't want to have to play around that guy, but he's impossible to remove as well. So I almost feel like Harrow is a pretty good model to take out. If you can kill Grange, try to kill the captain, obviously, is always a good play. Wendell just has a million hitboxes, and after he has half of his health gone, you stop gaining momentum from attacking him, which is a model, a rule I definitely think I need to have on stave for brewers, but that's just my opinion. So we ended up playing the game, and I just called it because we're kind of running out of time, and he won technically 7-4, but I just gave him the win and gave him the first place. So I got first place, he got first place, I got second, and then one of our other locals, Thomas, got third, and then the rest of you guys kind of came in the round down below. That was about it for my day. It was a very interesting Blacksmith's day, and I'm happy I was able to get more reps with them and get them on the table with that material, on top of meeting a lot of your new guys, which were really cool, building those relationships to really get the metas joined together, and I was very happy to kind of get that fostered. So that's about it.
Before we jump into my games, we had a reply on Twitter from last week's Blacksmith Talk about a couple different experiences or, I guess, interactions that we didn't cover. One of them was just the synergy with Alloy's Dirty Knives enables him to use Back to the Shadows. So it's just like a ranged Back to the Shadows versus the normal hit and run away. And then Hearth's Match Experience aura enables her to still keep close to Alloy so he can get an arsenal buff at the beginning of his activation.
Right, that's a good point. I did forget about that. To try to stay within that 6 inches. And then she has the worst. If anybody makes they make a pass, they can do the dodge themselves without spending momentum. So it's like half the Harry the Hat. It's not like you get to do either one of them. It's only the model making the pass, and they pass successfully to Model B. Model A can make the dodge, essentially.
And just as we like to talk to our opponents after games, if you guys hear an interaction or something we could have done, feel free to comment either on Twitter or Lance is always on the Muse forums. We post this, so either way, Facebook.
Yeah, absolutely. Keep us informed. We'll bring it up on the next episode and do our corrections and redactions segment, which I love. Feel like a real newspaper at that point. So,
well, now that we've started strong, we can go down the spiral of my games.
You had a good time, man. Come on, you had fun.
I had a lot of fun, but I'm realizing now that podcasting is kind of like airing your dirty laundry.
I just
dropped a deuce in my pants, and then instead of hiding it in the laundry and having my wife deal with it, I have to hold it up for the world to see and show my doo-doo track, so.
Oh, man, rough. That's very, very visual imagery. I appreciate that, so go ahead, man. You got it.
All right, so round one, I'm playing my morticians. I just assembled the team, and even though I've been hot on the butchers, I wanted to try out a new guild because they're so different than butchers. Like, I have fun winning with butchers, and I have some fun losing, but I always have fun with these zany morticians. So I needed to get reps in, and tournaments are a great way to get in reps.
Cool.
And I'm playing specifically Scalpel. Because I know if I assemble Obulus, I won't put him down, so I didn't even assemble him yet.
don't even give yourself the sweet candy that is him helping you out with that material. And this was also born out of a little bit. We kind of talked about this. I think we maybe talked about this last week. I don't remember. But that our conversation on the way up to the Minnesota tournament was that I was thinking a lot about Scalpel. Like, it just kind of came to mind where I was just like, I really kind of want to make her work. And you're like, well, why would you? She's really terrible. And I'm like, no, she can do blah, 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 blah. And you kind of go, yeah, I go, okay, she might be okay. And then we kind of had the conversation that we should both try to play her so that we could have a conversation topic about it, which we will get to a little later. But in the meantime, you took her to this tournament to build the appropriate experience.
Exactly. I needed to get in reps. So tournaments are the best way to get in real games, not just solitaire games, which I find myself doing at my table at home.
Absolutely.
But round one, I played against a guy who had actually listened to our episode one and was inspired. His name was Thomas Gino Stumi. He's one of your locals. And he said he was inspired by the shank talk that I gave, that he wanted to bring his butchers. So I was very flattered that this guy was going to be playing a team that I had spent so much, I guess, relishing over our first episode.
He's been playing Butcher since the beginning. He'd also has Union as a side team. But once Filet came out, I don't think I'd seen him play Ox since Filet had come out. So it was not only the Shank talk, but it was also the Ox talk. Definitely inspired him to give both of those models a shot for this tournament. He was very excited about it on Wednesday night. He got a few rep games in with that as well, preparing for this tournament, to know that he was very happy with those two models are capable of doing. So it's all your fault, Dan.
Well, that no matter what was going to happen, I was going to have a blast that game. But
absolutely,
I'll jump into it. My six that I actually played, I had Scalpel, Vile Swarm, Cosset, Graves, Silence, and Casket. And
original Graves, right?
Original Graves, but Vet Graves was on my bench along with Fangtooth, Ghast, and the Dodgy Monk Bonesaw.
Fangtooth was your Union option.
Hell yeah. We'll get into that. We'll get into that later.
Interesting.
So,
okay.
So again, I played against Butchers, and his lineup was very similar to one I had talked about. He had Ox, Veteran Brisket, Shank, Boiler, Princess, and Boar.
And I do like Veteran Brisket in that list. I think if you want that team to do a lot of killing and you have at least one good goal scorer, the ability to gain two influence on a goal shot I mean, that can just turn that team to an 11 in my mind. Giving him more influence on the table just lets more of those models do the work they need to get done.
Well, I think you and most of the world agree. I'm going to still stick with my brisket-less lineup.
Sure,
Shank is the one who scores all the goals. But
fair enough.
With this game, I mentioned earlier I played a little bit of solitaire at home. I put up the models on my table. I had been practicing a turn one casket time at home.
I love it.
So I knew exactly what it's like chess. I knew my opening move. Mm-hmm. So I set up my pieces. I kicked off to him. I used Silence as my kickoff model. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, he received with Boiler and was smart enough to defense or swift stance himself. I just ran Vile Swarm. The rat just ran. It's a useless activation, but it gives him an opportunity to mess up. And mess up he did.
He didn't see that turn one casket time coming.
He did not. So he moved He moved up Ox. Boiler had kicked the ball to Ox. Ox moved up, kicked the ball to Boar, and just put tough skin on himself. And I was just like drooling as soon as he walked Ox forward, because at that point, game, set, match. I move up Cosset 7 inches, lure him 5 inches. He moves one of his other models. I think he moves with Boar and just passes it to Shank.
Mm-hmm.
I then
pass with Boar.
Yeah,
wow.
He went with the 1d6 pass and he got there.
I love it.
I then went. Actually, no, he did not get there, but he was so close to the model that when it deviated, the ball still went where it needed to, so he just didn't get a momentum out of it.
Thomas has a notorious, just a brief aside, Thomas has a notorious streak to missing every pass when I play against him. I don't know if it happens to other models or with other characters, but anytime I play him and he plays against me, he misses 2 to 3 of his starting passes every game. So I feel bad that he missed one. I guess on the one dice one, I can't fault him for that, but that sucks.
So I next went with Graves. He tooled up Scalpel, and then he walked forward to engage Ox. At this point, I still don't think he knows what's going on, or he doesn't.
You had lured Ox away from his walk-up range. Like, where he'd walked, you had walked him even farther forward into Cosset range.
Yep, he was close enough that I was able to engage him. I'm not sure if Cosset engaged him or if it was just Vet Graves, but either way, regular Graves. He was in the danger zone, but I hadn't actually done any damage to him yet. But it was Pain Train's coming. Only tooled up Scalpel.
Got it.
He's still piddling around with the ball. I think he grabbed Shank and then passed it to Vet Brisket. I went at that point to get Silence out of the way. I'm planning ahead and I need Casket to be where Silence is currently standing. So Silence just moved and mm-hmm. that one influence I gave him to do a tucked in, he just used to smack a little Ox and
mm-hmm.
did a damage, nothing relevant. So yeah. He, at that point, I think just moved Princess. Here's where the moneymaker comes in. Scalpel, mm-hmm. I think I had to sprint up to get to him. Well, I don't know. Either way, I was able to get to him, bash him a bunch of times with a tooled up Scalpel. All the while, I am just repositioning him to get the maximum amount of, what do you call it, bonus up? Is that what it is when you have friends nearby crowding out?
Ganging up. Just up. So you were hitting him with like push dodges to basically shove him into positions that you wanted him to be in.
Yeah, she has a momentous push dodge on 3, so right. I was getting that one a lot. Just
yep.
2 damage, 2 damage, repositioning him. And then eventually I was repositioning him closer to Casket, who I'd given 2 influence to.
Mm-hmm.
And when all... because I loaded up Scalpel with 6 at turn 1.
Sure.
So when all was said and done, Ox had 2 HP left.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So now he knows what's going on, but he can't do anything about it. He just runs with his mom. I don't know if it was Vet Brisket. He ran with his whatever his last model was forward. Didn't do much. Casket popped his legendary, charged in, and put Ox in the box.
Wow. Turn one, Ox in the box. And it's bad when it happens to any player to put yourself at 4 VP and not have the model on the table. But to have your captain bringing the 4 influence he brings to the table off the table for one round, that's going to swing a lot of what that team is going to be capable of doing in one round. So
at this point, wow. I was ready to just like do a victory lap, shake my opponent's hand, ask him if he wanted to concede. Like, there were so many emotions. I felt happy, but I felt sad. Oh, I'm like, am I just punishing this new player too much? He likes the show.
No, he's not new. He's been playing for a while, man. You can't. I mean, he just didn't see that sort of thing coming. And we don't have a lot of people that play. One, a lot of people don't play Morticians. A lot of people don't play Casket. So the idea of making that sort of thing happen is, you know, not in everybody's mindset when they're going in. Especially with a load, because he only moved forward like maybe 5 inches, or did he move the full 7 off his midline, front line?
No, he didn't. He didn't run 7. He probably moved like 5 or so.
So, I mean, that's such a threat range that you were able to grab him and to bring him from his side of the table with just a small jog off his starting line to all the way to your end of the table and in the casket.
Like, if I needed to, I could have always used Scalpel's Legendary, but I didn't. The way it worked out, right. He was close enough that I could just keep repositioning him.
Very good. And the tooled up on him to bring the damage as you're doing it. Did he not make any counterattacks? Did you knock him down? Was he just saving the momentum? What was he doing?
I'm trying to think. Because obviously he could have... Oh, I think he did try to do a counterattack, but I always made sure that I was base to base with him. So
sure.
It's a momentous push dodge, so if he knocked me down, I would just use the momentum to stand up. So
sure. That's worked.
Unless he got a 2-inch push, he wasn't getting out of that.
Right. So, I mean, that's something, I guess, if a person were going to try to recreate that option, the model that you're going to pull off the table has to be the right defense, and you have to have, you know, the right amount of playbook results to know that you're not going to be immediately disengaged from that model. If you're facing off against somebody like Stoker from the Brewers, who has a 2-inch push on 1, that might not be the model you want to try this with, especially if they counterattack you, unless you can get a charge off on them and put the knockdown. But Scalpel's knockdown is on a relatively higher result. I think it's on a like 6.
Yeah, it's
not momentously on a 6.
It's rough.
Yeah, so wow, you just kind of had the perfect storm of material. You got to live your dream. I really find this interesting that between my Ferrite Missile and your Casket round 1, we kind of had these two examples of turn 1 play ideas that we could try to give out to the community and see if anybody likes it. So I find that funny.
Well, get ready, because this roller coaster is going to take a downward spiral pretty soon.
Oh, I know. Go for it, sir.
So I'm on top of the world right now. I win the momentum race, obviously, because I just beat the crap out of his caster, or his captain. I take the initiative, and I'm slowly realizing that he's got a goal threat with Brisket, and he also has a boar in front of my face, and I'm trying to decide, what do I do? Do I stop the goal, or do I stop the boar? And this is where my inexperience shines, because I chose to stop the goal simply on the logic that I have 4 VP, and I don't want him to have 4 VP. I'd rather he have 2 VP.
Sure.
That's not the right way to look at it, and I'll explain why. But I also knew I could do something really cool with Scalpel. So that Brisket, who has the ball, has unpredictable movement. I only have 1 model with reach, but I have Scalpel, who hasn't used her legendary yet. So I just ran over to Vet Brisket, popped my legendary, pulled that model in close, stole the ball, hit her a couple times, disengaged with my final hit, and then I second win myself to run away free. Is like the most amazing turn after the most amazing turn. It was just like,
right,
I'm feeling invincible.
Well, I'm so glad you didn't use that legendary on Ox.
I didn't need to. It was great, but
yeah,
This is it. This is all I did. The rest of the game was the boar, or not the boar, the butcher vengeance. Even without their 4 influence, boar came in. He did boar things, and I think he might not have killed Silence, but he beat the shit out of my model so much, and I couldn't do anything against a 2-inch melee. So I just sat there and took it. And then Princess came in. I put way too much influence on Scalpel, so that my models were not doing very much fighting in response. And then he was just able to kill 2 models that turn with Princess, Boiler, and Boar. And I killed 0 models. Just like this very, it was like fifth graders versus second graders. Like, my team just wasn't fighting the Butchers. And I don't know if it's because I took too much influence away from Graves that he wasn't able to do anything, or I didn't give enough influence to Casket to fight. I think each of them only had two. Like, I was just, I was not competing in this fight. It was bad. So,
I have some insight on that that we can talk about when we get into the scalpel material, but that's fine. Go ahead.
This is like all my game of solitaire didn't go past turn one, so after my after my perfect setup, I had no idea what to do.
Very shallow, just one perspective of your game with no insight into the mid or late game.
Yeah. I will a quick highlight that he did with Shank, just because we talked about Shank in episode one.
Absolutely.
I had, what do you call, Casket's little heavy burden on Shank, and I also had Shank pretty much engaged. So he's got a zero movement Shank right now.
But yikes.
He was able to pass the ball with Brisket, because I had Scalpel all over Brisket to try to keep her from scoring. He was able to pass the ball to a zero movement Shank, and then where'd they go? 4 inches away and get a tap in goal. Like, the model, it's so hard to plan around that stupid ass model. Like, I wish I never would have talked about it, because it was both very fun to lose to him, but also very frustrating. So hats off to, to Mr. Thomas Gino Stumi for beating me with the models that I love.
That's just the ultimate troll. I love it. It's fantastic.
Right, so I lost 4-12 that game. After my moment in the sun, I flew too close and just crashed down.
Did you score a goal? I thought you scored a... Did you not score a goal with Scalpel?
Not that game.
You grabbed it from Brisket and then dodged out. So, okay, got it.
I did very little after my awesome turn one and first activation turn two.
Gotcha, gotcha.
So, round two, I play against Masons. This is one of my locals. His name is Reggie Mathis. He is always following the tournament scenes. Like, he's always looking at lists. So he pulled what I think a list from the Germans from the WTC, a hammer list. So he had hammer, tower, mallet, marbles, brick, and flint, which, you know, if it was under the WTC guy, I'd be very, very scared. But knowing that Reggie is a new player, a little bit newer than me, I felt I had decent odds. And all the cool things I did in turn one, I didn't do anything cool this game. I moved up. I kicked again with silence. I tried to tucked hammer. I missed my one die goal needing a three.
And then my God.
At that point, I realized I just gave away silence. I'm 8 inches away from hammer, who has a full stack of shit. And I don't know what I can do to defend him. Like, I can use casket to try to defend him, but he doesn't need to charge me. He can just run in there and get there. So, I won't go over too many details. I just got my ass kicked.
What was the score in that game?
Oh, shit. I think it was 12-4 again. I mean, 4-12.
Did you actually score a goal in that game, or did you casket somebody?
Oh, I scored a pity goal at the end. It was like garbage time, and Scalpel just ran in, and he didn't contest it. All right, okay. So things got a little bit better around three. I played against my brother, and the gloves come off when it's a brother battle.
Yeah, it was the brothers white. I ended up pairing those off from the strength of schedule thing. They ended up pairing off. I'm like, all right, this is just going to be a good old sibling rivalry and see what happens.
So Mike's a known Brewers player, and yes, I included, as you mentioned earlier, why the hell do I have Fangtooth as my union? I include Fangtooth specifically to play against my brother because he has slow-ass Brewers, and I and I threw in both Casket and Fangtooth with their foul odor against the
double
Brewers.
Double stink clouds.
Yeah. Here's his lineup.
Yeah.
So he was playing Tapper, Scum, Friday, Hooper, Spigot, and Stave. Mm-hmm. And for this lineup, I brought in different. The first two games, I played the exact same thing. This time, I brought in Scalpel, Vile Swarm, Casket, Fangtooth, Ghast, and Graves. This was a 10 influence team.
Here's the original Graves again.
Regular Graves.
Okay.
I didn't actually play Gravette Graves. I just brought in all my big guys that were... I figured if we're going to be battling, I don't want him to just... I want to make it hard for him to get VPs, so I brought in the big guys.
Yeah. Though, I mean, that's fairly low defense standpoint. I mean, the ability for him to farm momentum off of those guys might be fairly high. Plus, you don't have a lot of reach models in there other than Graves and Ghast. I guess you have Ghast, but... All right, well, how'd that one go for you?
All right, well, some of the highlights. Vile Swarm. I learned that Second Wind on Vile Swarm is a thing. And okay. I just threw the rat missile at my brother, like just ran that rat, try to be the front line. And my thought was, I don't mind if it dies so long as it's going to do damage, and I want to get at least three people. And my brother took the bait, killed the rat. I blew up on three people, so that's 9 damage plus poison on 3 models.
Wow.
Obviously, he didn't clear the poison. Fast forward a couple more turns, same exact thing happened. So throughout this whole game, Vile Swarm did easily 20 points of damage to his team.
Jesus.
So
wow, okay.
That was a highlight with the dumbass rat. The double foul odor was really frustrating for Mike, specifically when I had the aha moment that Fangtooth could kill Vile Swarm when I needed it to, because Fangtooth has this like ability where he just... Oh. Does 4 damage to friendlies, or 5
the
damage.
The Unmasked?
To... Yep.
Yeah.
Well, yep. No, that's his playbook. He has a heroic that can kill it.
Oh, yeah. Hang on, let me grab him real quick. Yeah, Fangtooth Unleashed. All friendly models in the pulse immediately suffer 5 damage. It gets +2/+2 speed, +1 damage character plays that cause damage to playbook results. He can use that to... Oh, my God.
Because the rat comes back with 4 HP. So... If I have him near Fangtooth, I can kill the rat at will, so long as I position... If I have the rat in a position where I want it to die, Fangtooth just kills it for me.
That's pretty good. I mean, are you not in the scrum with some of your other models taking that 5 damage,
too? Oh, yeah, there was collateral damage. This wasn't okay. This wasn't any technical scalpelness. This was just a mosh pit of flesh
That's
and foul
awesome.
Odors.
I didn't even think about that. That's pretty good. I like that.
So there was.
That hurts him too, go ahead. Doesn't it?
Yeah, it does hurt him too. But he's got 29 boxes, so he's got one more than Wendell, so he can take it.
Yeah. Fair enough. All right, anyway, go ahead.
I mean, that was really the highlight of the game, is the rat doing 20 points of damage and him not being able to kill Fangtooth or Casket. He eventually did kill. He just picked. He scalpeled out my easy to kill models and took out Graves and took out my captain.
Sure.
And the whole time the big guys were just fighting, but it was a much closer game than I've had versus my brother's Brewers. I think it might have been 8-12 at the end.
Okay.
But it got the wheels turning. It's like, I think this isn't the list to fight Brewers, but I like the Fangtooth Vile Swarm interaction. I'm going to keep exploring that and see what happens. If anything else, it was just fun as shit to blow up a rat on him.
That's very funny. So yeah, you ended the day with 3 losses out of the 3 rounds. But more importantly, and we'll do this to transition to the last segment of the day, you got more experience with Scalpel, so we could have the conversations of, you know, making her work, list building, just general strategies with her, and seeing how it ends up working out. So if we're done with the tournament, I think we can move on to strategy session with Scalpel. So let's go and take a look at her and tell me your initial thoughts. Just taking a look at her, what are you thinking?
Well, after taking a look at her, she reminds me of Filet, a very high playbook, knockdowns late in the playbook. So obviously her weakness is going to be counterattacks.
Mm-hmm.
But unlike Filet, Scalpel is not your... I think a lot of morticians just assume she's the damage dealing model because she has 7 tack and Obelus only has 5. Unless she has tooled up, this model does not do a lot of damage. So
no, and I agree. And that kind of goes back to the point I was going to make back in your tournament, but I wanted to leave it to here. The games that I've played with her, and now arguably I played into Farmers both games that I played with her, and the amount of reach models in that team is crazy, and it's a very hard team to kill. Even with the defense being as low as they are, they have enough hit points to where it's really hard to put a team member down permanently. They're able to heal themselves back so quickly, it's really hard to do. And I found that a lot of teams I was building her with, I was having difficulty generating the damage I needed to get that casket time to go down. I mean, even with P. Graves in the team and Cossett,
it's hard.
And Rage, like I had, so my play when I was playing with her, I played the same lineup both times. I played Scalpel, Dirge, Graves, Cossett, Casket, and Rage, just because I felt like I needed enough damage on the team to make, you know, to try to make the Casket time a possibility. And both games, I had difficulty singling out any one model to kill them to where I could get the Casket time to even go off. And it was really frustrating to be able to not do that, because I just do feel that she doesn't generate enough damage, even though she has the momentous threes at a high level. You know, with dodges and push dodges and the agonies and stuff, she's almost more wanting to do her character plays and her tricksy maneuverability than she is putting out the hurt on anybody.
100% agree. And I learned that the hard way, just multiple games trying to treat her like the super solo and fully load her. You're not doing a lot of work. Like, I'm not out fighting someone if I'm giving her six influence. Instead, if you utilize Second Wind, if you utilize Wake the Dead, and if you just like use her to slippery move somewhere and poke someone, like her best playbook result is the four. So she preys on her four. She does two momentous damage in a character play. Tormented Agony, she can remove an influence and allocate it towards another enemy model within 10 inches, but removing that one influence is like where she earns her namesake. She's a scalpel. Absolutely. Find that furious model, take away their one influence, stay engaged for a turn. They do nothing. It's just...
Yeah, I got to do that against a Windle. Like, I was able to charge into the lines, pull the Windle out, hit him twice to take away the thing, push dodge away, and then Second Wind away from the Windle to where he was no longer near his harvest token, so he couldn't get his breakfast, and he had no influence to do anything with. So, but they had already spent influence on tooling him up and trying to get him in a position that I was able to just take all of his tools away from him and leave, which was very, very cool. It's an interesting model to do that kind of stuff with, to where you can go in and really scalpel out those models that you don't like and steal the influence off them, because just stealing influence and putting it on like their mascot, all of a sudden their team's doing way less than they were originally planning to do at the start of their activation. And then the Second Wind is just your get out of jail free card. It is your super skilled within shadow. If you can pull it off to where you can get that push dodge on three, allows her usually to disengage any model that she wants to, and then all of a sudden sprint away 7 inches, additional 7 inches.
Or if you're like me, you use it to make your slow little bomb go up the board quicker to run at your ranged opponent or your brewer's opponent. But that's right. That might be my own personal tech. I don't know how good that is yet.
I do like it if you can do that, especially if she makes a goal run and you have knee slider. If you score the goal, if you're going to score the goal, you pop a heroic, score the goal. She dodges seven inches, and then she dodges 9 inches. So all of a sudden, she jogs seven, dodges nine. So usually, if you're not engaged with her, she can get almost all the way back to wherever. If you know what model they're going to kick out to, the 10 inches out, or try to reposition yourself, you can usually put yourself in a really good position to be able to counter back on the next act, you know, the next turn with something kind of crazy, which is super fun. She's just such a highly mobile model. The first time I ever played against her was against Jamie Perkins, one of the, you know, play test guy, designers of the game, and he beat me with a scalpel team. But he had told me that every time he plays Scalpel, his entire team is in this zone A over here, and Scalpel is all the way across the table by herself. Like, she goes in, she hits people, and then she dodges behind the team. Like, he plays the team split out to where he has his entire roster on one side of the field, and then Scalpel on the way other side, wherever that ends up being. It's like, it happens every time I play her. She has to be over there. So I always take that to heart, that the guy who designed or helped design the game knows that she's going to be off on her own being super mobile, though I always try to play her to get her back to her team so that she can get support with people around her. But
That's a good way to look at it, because morticians, the more I keep running them up the table to face off against other fighty teams, the more I realize they are not going to outfight brewers or butchers. You need to maybe divide them up a bit and scalpel out the models, not just meet them head on in a fight.
Right. Which is why I feel like, as much as I would like to include her in a team where the, you know, a bunch of damage is being done and repositioning of models, I do feel like with the list that I had and I gave out to, Obulus is going to be a better captain. He's going to, with the lure with Cosset and the puppet strings, I should be able to get any model I want to across the table and into any kind of beatdown. You know, I need to have happen. That is going to be much more reliable and likely, plus more 2-inch reach that I can use to gang up on a model and really put the hurt on them before putting them in a casket. So I think if you want to go that route, unless you get lucky like Dan did in that first round,
hey, I plan that, all right?
Yeah, you plan that out. I do feel like Obulus would do it almost trivially, whereas Scalpel has to hit the perfect target and get the perfect results in order to stop that, to get that sort of thing to happen.
I'll agree.
I think Obulus do it pretty regularly.
I'll agree to disagree. I mean, Obulus has the puppet strings to pull him in deeper, but yeah, with TAC 5 and without anatomical precision, even if he like he can't do puppet strings and beat someone to death. That's
no,
too much.
No, it's going to be you probably Graves would tool up casket, then Graves, because you're gonna be able to move the model farther, so Graves will be able to get some hits in. You'll have more influence on the table as well. Like, I think because she's only a 4-6,
yeah, he's and a 5-7,
yeah, so you're gonna have more influence to spread out on the table to be able to actually get to get and to get their model all the way into where you need, engaged perfectly where you want them to be, tool up casket, then Rage goes crashing in, Graves goes in and hits them, does some crucial artery stuff, tools up casket goes in and finishes the job. It's not that Obulus is going to do the killing, it's Obulus is going to set up the killing better than possibly than what Scalpel could, but I'm willing to have that argument too. I think that's a back and forth. I think there were just a lot of games where I was playing in it where I felt like if I had Obulus, I would have had a much better time, and that the Scalpel was just a little harder to pull off the stuff I was trying to pull off in terms of bringing someone back, like trying to lure them back into my team, was a little harder to do with Scalpel than it would be with Obulus. But
I think we both agree Scalpel is not a fillet. She's not a hammer. You don't just load her up and try to take out a model. It's not going to work, right, even with tooled up. But I think we've got a different, through our games, a different path we want to explore. I more want to try her as a behind the scenes captain, where she's using her Wake the Dead and Second Wind on her team rather than out on the sides like Jamie P was playing. I'm going to give that another whirl, see if I can't find a way in which she's a support captain before I try the super solo. She'll still hit things, but I don't know. I don't know if I don't always have to second win myself if I feel like if all I'm doing is just stripping a momentum or stripping an influence, and I feel like they won't have enough influence to kill her in return.
I feel like my design to play her will be not as that, but to be that super mobile solo to then pair with make it much more of a goal scoring mobility team. So I would have it be her, Mist, maybe even Bonesaw,
yeah,
like try to get some
Bonesaw
fast players on the table, have those three on the table, and then have a few beaters in the back to just kind of shore up the midline. And then let those three just challenge every angle of goal scoring. I think she would be really good at that. I think she would play that game incredibly well, like to where she could come in if she's in the midfield and everybody crashes into the scrum and she's up by the goal. Let's say she scored a goal. She could come forward and legendary to free my midline, you know, to pull them back off of my scrum. And then let the scrum keep crashing forward. I just feel like you could play the game to where you could play the game entirely on their side of the field with three good goal threats that they couldn't decide where they wanted the ball to be without it being in threat of one of those three models stealing it and making a shot.
I mean,
snapshotting it to a team.
If I was always receiving, I think that would be fun. But I guess my limited experience with playing Bonesaw is if I'm not receiving, I hate the model. Like, he just...
Well, I think Scalpel gives you the idea, because I've had some ideas with Scalpel as well, doing the same similar thing to Ferrite, whereas if you kick off with Scalpel in the middle of the table and just kind of kick the ball to one side or the other, not full to the edge, but to like towards their team, let them grab the ball and pass it to somebody, you can get Scalpel with her 9-inch sprint forward. She can run up, if single out the model that has the ball and do her legendary, pull mm-hmm. him 3 inches forward, strip the ball off him, and shoot a goal. In that time, you're putting the pressure on him immediately to deal with her, because then, you know, again, if you have that second wind, if you have that knee slider, you can run right back, which is awesome. But then in the meantime, all you're doing is giving Bonesaw one so he can just run up a wing, just any wing by himself. And then as the game progresses, they have to decide between Mist on one wing, Bonesaw on another wing, and Scalpel right up the middle.
All right, you're selling me a bit more on this idea, and I'm
Does
glad
it makes sense. Like, you got the threats on all sides, so that wherever way the ball goes, you have position, you have someone there, and you start giving out influence to all three of them, so that they have to make a choice, and none of the choices are good.
Damned if you do. I like that. I'm glad you covered her. Her awesome legendary application when she's mm-hmm. the kickoff model and the easy, I'm going to take the ball back and score a quick goal.
Yeah. It's just like the Ferrite thing, just a bit more reliable, I would say, other than that she's only she's a 3-6 kick, not a 4-8 like Ferrite is. But you'd have to kind of make the plan out. And of course, if they have countercharging models, you got to be real careful about Mason's teams and Farmer's teams with Taters and that sort of thing. Or if they have a goal, goal person there, you might have to engage them as well. But again, with that push dodges, you have ways of trying to disengage the model a little bit easier than you normally would. But you're just looking for, if you're not the receiving player, you're just looking for time for Bonesaw to get into a position. And I feel like she would put the pressure on deep enough to where you wouldn't have to really worry about it. So that's my plan on trying to make her work, is to definitely make her more of a goal scoring team and try to get some more models with reach. Like, I'd put Gas. If I play Morticia's team without Gas, I feel naked. Like, I just feel like he's such a guaranteed guy, and he's not in that other list. In every game I was playing, I was like, if I had Gas in here, it would be, you know, 100 times better. So I would definitely put Gas in that list, and as much other 2-inch reach models as I can get my hands on, probably Graves, just to have a little bit more beating in the middle of the table and try to play that way. But I do feel like she's definitely more of a mobile striker, you know, much more of a goal striker than she is a killer. I would agree with that.
She should be called Swiss Army Knife, because you can use her legendary any way you want. You can use it to steal the ball after a kickoff and score a goal. Yep. You can use it to disengage a furious model or just disengage a striker who needs to go somewhere. You can use it to engage a model with unpredictable movement. Like, I never have a plan on how I'm going to use this legendary. It just naturally happens. Like, oh shit, this is gonna work. Yeah.
The applications are almost endless. So I feel the same way with Briskets, our Season Briskets legendary as well. The whole she gets within that range and then teleports to base to base with the model and lets the model make a dodge. That gets you out of jail, gets you into goal score range. If she's getting ganged up on, she can jump out of it. There's so many different ways to play that legendary, and I feel definitely, while this is not that interesting, you know, you're just pulling models directly towards her with 3 inches towards her. The uses are quite extensive. There's always things you can do with her. So
she's my girl. I'm giving her some more. She's my goth gal.
Don't build your ovulus yet. You know, as soon as you do, you're on the path to hell. But once you're there, just keep with her.
I had my wife hide it along with the cookie, so I'm good.
Oh, perfect, perfect, perfect. Well, I think that's about it. You got anything else?
That's it. If you are ever interested in reading about Guild Ball content, you can go to MidwestWarGaming.com.
For those of you who know who I am, I've definitely done a lot of work with the Muse on Minis podcast. I know those gentlemen very well, and I've done a lot of work with them. Muse on Minis, of course, carries a ton of Guild Ball-related products. We have measuring sticks, widgets, proxy bases, little 1-inch steppers for both 30, 40, and 50 millimeter bases, as well as the official tokens of Steamforged Games. Go ahead and buy anything you need for your Guild Ball needs at museonminis.com/store, and they will take care of you. Okay, thank you for listening to The Pitch. This has been Lance.
And this is Dan.
Have a good night.
Later.